and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and joining me this week, we have a very special guest, one Jack Ding. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Jay. How are you?
I'm fantastic. So, Jack, we've communicated via email a few times. I don't think we've ever met in person that I can think of or chatted in online, but although I'll be embarrassed, I guess, if we didn't, I forgot.
I think we have met once briefly.
Okay, yeah. Was it a Lock and Load or WTC?
No, I think it was WTC 16, okay. I believe. Or 17, I don't remember, but it was very brief.
Yeah, it's tough at the WTC when you're meeting like hundreds of new people, keeping track of everyone.
Yeah. I don't remember if we said anything to each other, but...
Right. So, I guess I'll do a quick introduction, and then I'll have you introduce yourself as well, but... part of the reason why I wanted to finally get you on the podcast, and it's well overdue in my opinion, is that a lot of the I think Australia has a lot of fantastic War Machine and Horde players, and a lot of the people that I respect in Australia, you are one of the people that they speak very highly of, and you're one of the most well-regarded players in Australia. I think that's very safe to say. it's long past due, and I'm excited to have you on the podcast. But why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself some?
All right, so I think I started playing around 2014 now. It's been quite a few years now. And towards the end of Mark II, I started playing Protectorate and Legion in Mark II. Although most of it was Legion with a little bit of Protectorate. But then when the transition to Mark III came, to be honest, Legion's kind of a bit of a dumpster fire. So I tried to play it for a bit, and it just felt terrible. And occasionally I still go back and try it, but it still feels terrible. So mostly I play Protectorate. I played a little bit of Signar in Mark III, just for something different. But overall, I play Protectorate. And yeah, from Sydney, Australia, probably should have said that earlier. I don't really travel too much War Machine. I've been overseas for the WTC twice, but mostly I play in Australia in conventions around Australia.
Awesome. I know that I remember Aaron Well came over to America. I think this was kind of shortly after Animag came out, and there was kind of the Primal Terror upgrades,
and yes.
he mentioned that you had been kind of terrorizing everyone.
Yes,
with
true. Okay, so
Legion brief, in that time frame.
I forgot that brief window of War Machine history. So for about 3 months, Legion in Mark III was quite good. It was around the time Anime came out, Primal Terrors came out, and everyone was trying to deal with Hellmouths, with the Blightbringer. And that was because of a couple of reasons. Firstly, Legion was one of the first CIDs, so they had a lot of new toys, and basically people tried to put some models on the table and run into it and see what would happen, and the result wasn't good because Animag had generally at the time the biggest numbers both offensively and defensively you could come up with, especially for non-Warbeast units. And people were complaining about it, and they were losing to it. But then after, let's say, another couple of months, other CIDs came out. People started to realize you could just shoot it, and she couldn't really do much about it. And then that was 3 months where it was good, and then afterwards, never see it anymore. Pretty much haven't seen it since then.
Okay, well, that was Jack's brief interlude with terrorizing people with Legion. But the main event we're here to talk about is Protectorate of Menoth. So, starting off, we'll have some questions from the people who support us on Patreon. And then I'll have some questions for you afterwards. So, first question, we have Grey Lord Dave. He says, are you looking forward to Fiora 4?
So, some of the people that know me probably remember that I have a bit of a love-hate relationship with Fiora. Not anyone in particular, just Fiora. Because in Mark 2, I used to complain about Fiora 2 a lot. About how she was really uninspiring, but still playable. And I did play her at a few tournaments. CanCon in particular, I think I played it. I used to complain, and then I would still play it, and they would say, kind of like a battered wife syndrome, where, you know, you don't like it, but you keep playing it. I was like, that's fair enough. And then Mark 3 came, and she no longer has Ignite, which is kind of like half a toolkit, because she didn't really have much, right? She has Escort, and she has Ignite, and she had a Bond. So now her Bond is a spell, which is most of the time strictly worse than her Bond. She has Escort, she doesn't have Ignite, she has nothing to replace it with. So she kind of is just not functional. So, you know, I was like, alright, unplayable, fine. And then they printed Fiora 3, and I was like really excited, it was going to be really good. She's not that good. I mean, she's playable in the right circumstances, which doesn't really do anything. She's kind of got Ignite, pretty much it. Might be good in Infernals, but you should ask someone else about that, I guess. And then they announced Fiora 4, so I was like pretty excited. And then the rules, tentative rules, I guess, came out, and I think they're actually quite good, even though a lot of people disagree with me. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited. That's the short version.
So, honestly, it feels like Fiora Force CID. I don't even know if it was a CID. Did they just do a preview ever?
I think somebody posted a CID of her on Facebook. So she has Resourceful, apparently, which is one of the more interesting roles for a Menoth caster. So.
Yeah, so it's been so long since we knew more about her. Besides Resourceful, what are some of the things that you remember her having in her kit, and what about her makes her so that there's finally a Fiora that you're excited about?
Hmm. Well, she has a functional spell list. Probably.
That helps.
Probably. And by function, I mean more than one spell that I want to cast. That doesn't require her to walk forward and probably die to cast it. Apparently she might trade in what she has currently, which is Tantrum, which is what the child has, I believe. She has the one, the upkeep that gives vengeance to her unit. And she has this mechanic where she gets +1 strength for each turn the game has progressed. And then if she gets to 5, she gets 2 more focus on top of being resourceful, and she might have some other upkeeps that I've forgotten. But basically, she has a couple of options, which is nice, because Fiora has either, the other Fioras either have no options, or like one option that's not great. So having a caster that can play, you know, a different game plan, depending on the matchup, is nice. The power-up mechanic looks cool. I don't know if it's going to be practical. She starts at power 12, which is kind of terrible, but, you know, I mean, she's probably not going to need to hit anything until at least turn 4 or 5, so it's, at that point, it's not great, but it's at least functional. So, you know, we'll see. But at the moment, she looks definitely more interesting than any of the other Fioras they've printed to start.
I am somewhat curious of your opinion. I don't know if you've dabbled any with Infernals or played much against them, but Fiora 3 has had a little bit of interest in Infernals. Do you have an opinion of her in the cross-faction setting?
Mm. So, I think I have played a little bit with Infernals, and I played against it a little bit more than that. I haven't played Fiora in Infernals, but I think that she probably is better in Infernals than in Protectorate. Just because Infernals doesn't have that many casters in the first place to play around with. So what she does offer is harder to replace. Like, if in Protectorate, you get damage buffs pretty much anywhere. You can get a speed buff for a Warjack pretty much anywhere. So really, what does she offer that's unique? Like, Vanishing Ward is just bad Arcane Ward. And her feat is basically non-functional. Like, not non-functional, but it actually just, it's get 4 focus for free, which is not a good feat, and also almost identical to a bunch of other Protector feats, which are also like. So in Protector, she doesn't really do anything unique.
Mm-hmm.
But in Infernals, she does offer some things which they might not have, which is an easy to apply damage buff, and a fast, mobile caster, which if you play it in the, is it Hearts of Darkness theme? I can't remember the name. The non-Infernal Masters thing.
Yeah, that one's Hearts of Darkness.
Lets you start with your upkeeps in, which means you don't actually have to cast Vanishing Ward, so you can get further up, which makes use of her speed 8 to get up the board. And I mean, it means she can run some Menoth models, which Infernals may be interested in. Some people might want to run Adjudicator, might want to run, you know, Trampings of the Wall, or whatever models you want to use, basically, that she can run quite well. So I think she has potential in Infernals. Definitely more interesting there than in Protectorate.
Yeah, I do think you're right that being able to get effectively +3/+3 between her spell and sight and gaining access to Severius Zero, which is also something that is pretty interesting for Infernals, but is common, obviously, in Menoth, is something that I think is pretty interesting, at least.
Ironically, it's slightly less common now in Menoth.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly because it doesn't work in Faithful Masses. So you have to play Creator's Might or Exemplar Theme, which is fine as a second list. Well, Exemplar is fine as a second list. Creator's Might, we'll leave that for later. But Creator's Might is another story. But either way, most people are playing Faithful Masses as at least one of their two lists, if not both. So sometimes you just don't see any Sub-Zero. But the option is there.
All right, so our next question, this is still from Grey Lord Dave. He says, what niche does Guardians of the Temple fit?
That's an interesting question because
especially on some of these more corner case theme lists that people probably haven't seen, can we go over real quick what's in the theme list so that people know what we're talking about? Basically the Flame Guard theme
list, is that correct? The Guardians of the Temple, you can run basically all the Flame Guard units, all the Warjacks with a couple of the character Warjacks, and the theme benefit is basically you get, while base-to-base, Temple Flame Guard game tough and can't be knocked down, and you get to ambush a unit of Daughters. It's not super inspiring when you read it. Despite that, I have registered a Guardians of the Temple list multiple times in large events. I haven't had to play it in those events, but I have registered it a few times. Mostly because it's the fastest list you can put on the table as a Protectorate player. So it does give you some leverage in matchups which you wouldn't otherwise be able to get. Like being able to run Flame Guard Cavalry, ambushing Daughters if you want that, is quite nice. I don't really like Temple Flame Guard that much, but they are cheap and annoying to get rid of. And if you run enough units, it can be a scenario problem for your opponent. So there are some matchups where you want to get up the board really quickly, whether you're playing for a scenario or trying to stop them from bum rushing you on scenario. And running Speed 9 Cav with Pathfinder is something that you can't really get anywhere else in the faction. So it does let you, it does make the opponent think about it if you have in your list pairs, as long as they think that you might play it. And in some matchups, I have played it, like, not in a tournament, but I have played it in casual play, and it's okay. It's relatively good on scenario. It does have problems with killing high armor models. Like, if they put a Colossal with an armor buff in front of you, it just feels terrible if you don't have basically a heavy in range. It does have its uses. I don't hate it. It's not super exciting. The most annoying part about the list is that if you go to the requisition options, you get two decent solos, you get Nicaea and Pyrus for free, which is fine. But then your third option is just all garbage. Like, there's actually nothing you actually want for the last requisition point. So it just feels bad, no matter what you take. You can take, like, two vassals in an infantry list, which is terrible. You can take reclaimers, which are terrible. And really, you don't have any options, which is probably the worst part. You can take a Temple Flame Guard attachment, but that's 4 points. So really, yeah. If they make something exciting for another requisition point, it could definitely spice it up.
All right, so next question. This is still from Grey Lord Dave. He says, what releases does Resnik 1 need to become competitive?
I'm not sure if it's a release that's holding him back, or it's just the fact that his spells don't really work on a Focus 6 caster. Like, he's got Ignite, he's got Hexblast, Engine Destruction, all those spells other people have and can do better. So those are fine, but they're not a reason to play him. Perdition is kind of just an unreliable spell. It's good to tell them you have it. You don't really ever want to cast it, because if you're casting it, it means, well, there's two problems. Firstly, if you're casting it, you're either using an Arcanoid or you're not. If you're using an Arcanode, you've got to bring an Arcanode, which is terrible, because there are no playable Arcanodes in Menoth, really. With the exception of maybe Severus' character, Jack. So then you're casting with your character, like with your Warcaster. If you're casting with your Warcaster, you probably have to win the game at that point, because you're too far up. And you have to damage with the power 10. It's kind of like the Stranglehold problem of being unreliable. So if you fail, you've lost. It's kind of like a Hail Mary, which is not, you know, it's good to have in the pocket, but it's not something you can rely on in a game. Which goes to his last spell, which is Brand of Heresy, which is supposed to be his, I guess, defining spell. And it's boosted attack and damage rolls against target model unit for Warjacks that he's running. The problem with this spell is you have to have multiple attacks on a Warjack to get focus efficiency, because it costs 3. So if you're casting it on something, and then you're shooting with one gun, you actually lost focus doing it. So you have to either shoot it with a lot of shots, or models that have a lot of shots. And in Protector, really, that's only Redeemers, Judicator, or like you have to run like Repenter Spam or something like that. You don't really want to play Repenter Spam, that's the first thing. Redeemers are kind of very niche in that they can offer... There's a reason to play them, but it's not really for damage purposes. You don't really want to run Brand of Heresy, a bunch of Redeemers, just to kill one time. Because that's a lot of points, a lot of focus to do not that much, basically. And then, yeah, you can run Adjudicator, but it can just boost its own attack and damage rolls. You're already rolling like a million dice. You really don't need this. So he doesn't really do anything. That's the problem. He doesn't do anything that you would want that you can't get somewhere else that, you know, does it better. And his feat looks good, but it's really just, I really need to kill this person, and I hope I'm close enough to feed on their caster. It almost never comes up. So I don't know if a release would help him so much as maybe if they reworded some of his spells or gave him a different spell, or I really don't know what would make me play Resnik if they didn't change his caster card at the
moment. His core abilities.
Yeah. Like maybe if they gave him if there's some way to get Sprint in faction, and then I'm struggling here. I don't really know why I would play this guy. Like he doesn't even have good stats. He goes to power 18 if you cast Engine, but then he has 4 focus, and you can get up to 6 if you want, which is fine, but it's not even that good. Like, if you want a beat stick, there are better beat sticks and more flexible ones. If you want a support caster, there are better ones. I mean, he's a cool looking model, that's all I got to say, really, at the end of it.
Yeah, he's, and this becomes, you kind of touched on this with Infernals, but this kind of becomes true as factions gain more and more casters. There becomes, yeah, more and more of an opportunity cost. And
yeah, it's hard to find a spot on the roster the more options you have.
Right.
And he doesn't really have any reason to play with, basically.
All right. So, next question is from Imperial. He says, if you were to want to play all 3 character heavies in Guardians of the Temple, which caster would you choose and how would you build the list?
Putting it on the spot here. Okay. Guardians of the Temple, all 3 character heavies. Let me just double check the one. So, Eye of Truth, Blood of Martyrs, Hand of Judgment. So, I think the best caster to run in Guardians of the Temple is probably Harvey. And the reason for that is she gives a speed buff, which is really good because the list is... The reason you're playing the list is because it's fast. So, by making it faster, it gives you more reason to want to play it for those matchups. And there are not that many infantry speed buffs in the faction. Like, there's Vindictus, but Dash from Serenia. But Harvey also keeps your Cav alive. The only problem with Harvey is that she doesn't have a damage buff. And Guys in Flame don't hit that hard. So I think running all 3 character heavies is probably a decent idea because they all hit, you know, reasonably hard with just a fire buff. So if I was to build it, well, let me just quickly have a look. So that if you run all 3 character heavies, that leaves you with 48 points, which is enough to fit. Yeah, that works. So that's it. That's exactly enough to fit 2 units of Daughter Cav and a unit of Daughters of the Flame. I would consider dropping a unit of the Cav for some more bodies, either Temple Flame Guard, or more daughters, really. The list is a little bit awkward in that I would probably only run two of the character heavies and not all three. But if you were going to run all three, I think the list is still functional. So all three character heavies, two units of Cav, Choir, and Daughters is probably somewhere to start.
All right. So his next question is, does the Attendant Priest have a place in Creator's Might with a Merc unit? And what Merc units would you say bring something for Menoth?
I'm assuming we're not counting Adrian's as Merc units.
Yeah, probably not.
For this discussion.
Yeah.
I think Creator's Might doesn't really have any place in Menoth at the moment. It's a Warjack list, but Faithful Masses is also a Warjack team, and it does pretty much anything that Creator's Might does better. The only upside of Creator's Might is you can run Sev Zero. So if you really want to run Warjacks and Sev Zero, you can run Creator's Might. But if you're running Warjacks and Sev Zero, you're not going to run an Attendant Priest. So my opinion is, the answer to that question is no. Like, I don't think you would ever run an Attendant Priest, and that's the end of that discussion.
Okay. So his next question is, in Warriors of the Old Faith, what lists/builds would be competitive that do not have Lab 3 at the helm?
I think you can make a list with both Resnik 2 and Krios 3. Resnik 2 would basically look almost the same as a Vlad list. He would be slower to get up the board, but he does offer a caster that is slightly harder to kill from range, has a lot more output in melee. The downside obviously is that Death March has no good targets if you don't take a unit of Cav, which he probably doesn't want to, and he's a huge base, which is always a pain to play around. I think he is playable. He does offer some things, like Spell Piercer is unique, and it does swing some matchups to the point where they just can't play them. The other caster you can play is Krios 3. I think Tomas came up with a list recently, probably like a month ago now, where he's running double Vengers with Krios 3 and Warriors of the Old Faith, which looks kind of interesting. I always disliked running a unit of Cav in Warriors of the Old Faith, but I didn't think about running like two units, like pretty much just Cav. Like if you have one unit, it's squishy and they'll shoot it. Or because the rest of the list is really irritating and high armor solo, so they're not going to want to shoot those. So if you run a random unit of Cav, they're just going to kill it. It's going to do nothing. But if you run a lot of them, it suddenly becomes, they can kill like, you know, maybe a unit, maybe even a unit and a bit. But then, because of his elite cadre, the remaining couple will do a lot of work. So I think that could work. So if you wanted to play Krios 3 in Warriors of the Old Faith, I would consider trying double Vengers along with the usual suspects. I think that has some interesting areas there that I haven't tried. So give that a go.
So I have a confession. I understand that there are a lot of players who have like this draw to Resnik 1. I never really felt that myself. But Resnik 2 just looks really cool to me. The times I've played against him, I think that if someone is good with that caster, that he can do some kind of interesting things and is an interesting caster in my opinion. Have you played much of him, and what have been kind of your successes playing him?
I haven't played that many games with him, but I have played quite a few games against him, against good players. And it is, you're right, if they're a good player with a good list, he is actually quite interesting to play against. His kit is very situational, but like Lamentation is either a blank or really, really good. Spell Piercer is the same, right? Either you're never going to cast it because it does absolutely nothing, or it can completely just... For example, if you're playing the Mirror in Protectorate and you want to shoot their stuff, if you have Spell Piercer and they don't, well, you know, that's suddenly... You have two gun lines, one of which can't shoot at all, and then you just win. So he has... Those two spells are very binary. Either they're really good, or they're basically not on his card. Death March is a fine spell. It's not always good in the list that he wants to play. And Boundless Charge is always a good spell for the Protector Warjacks, because they're generally quite slow. His feat is kind of terrible. I don't think I've ever seen anyone get any value out of it, and I've also never gotten anything great out of it, so it's kind of just terrible. But he really, it's all about his personal output, and his survivability. So he's obviously hard to shoot, he hits really hard, and he's very mobile. So if you can keep him alive, which isn't super hard, if you run Madeline Corbeau, it makes him safe from most melee attacks from, you know, warrior models. Protector has a lot of shield guards from shooting on top of his, what is it called? Lamentations of the something that prevents him from getting shot. Lamentations of Suffering. So he's a very survival caster that can threaten to do a lot of work. He's repo, he's fast, he's got native Pathfinder, so he's good, he's a good bully, basically. If they can't bypass his defensive tech of standing relatively far up the board and threatening to kill your staff without dying, he becomes a bit of a problem to deal with. Which really translates into his play, wants to play a scenario game where he threatens a zone or sits on a flag up the board and says, either you come into contest and I'll kill it for free with my caster, or I'm just going to score points and it's going to win on scenario. So I think he's, at first I really didn't like him that much, but I think he's actually okay. I just don't like playing huge base casters that much, but
yeah.
He has definitely, I played games against him where he's definitely performed quite well. So he's decent. I would say he's probably like a B+ caster. So if you really want to play him and you really like him, I think he's got legs.
Yeah, speaking of the huge base caster thing, there's one of the casters who just like kind of grinds that into my consciousness over and over is anytime I try to play Old Witch 3. I'm just sitting there thinking, like, man, this would be so amazing if she was on a different size base.
True, but Old Witch 3, that's the Grimkin one?
Yeah, yeah.
She has transfers, at least.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not as big of a deal if you do mess up and get hit with something as compared to a, you know, focus caster.
Yeah, so. You're correct. Real quick, before we leave Resnik 2, since the advent of Warriors of the Old Faith, is there any other theme list that you would play him with, or is it basically just go with Warriors?
I think you could play him in any theme except for Guardians of the Temple. I have played him in both Creator's Might and Exemplar and Faithful Masses. I think Faithful Masses is the best theme, but he doesn't really need it as much as some other casters need it, because he's not usually too scared of shooting, so he doesn't need the free shield guards. I played him in Creator's Might because he's good with Sev Zero, shocking. I mean, it makes him more accurate and hit harder. And he does like to run some Warjacks anyway because of Boundless Charge. And he's good in Exemplar theme because Death March on Errants with support is quite good. So really, you can play him in anything that's not Temple Flameguard, and you can make a list that will do work. So he's quite flexible in that regard.
Okay. All right, so next person with questions is Jacob, and he has some questions about Menoth in relation to the recent Convergence CID. He says, how does Menoth prepare for Asphyxius 4?
When he says Convergence CID, does he mean Aurora 2 as well, or does he just mean Gas?
Yeah, he does have a follow-up asking how also do you deal with the Auroras and the long-distance Angel threats.
I have played a lot against Gatsby before, and I would say upwards of like 20-something games against him in different lists, but I haven't played any games against Aurora, so most of my answer here is going to be based on Gatsby. I actually think Gatsby is not great against Protectorate. He does a few things. He goes a Cloud War, and he is a very efficient melee beatstick. Maybe one of the most efficient in the game. And Menoth are not really that fussed about the Cloud War because you can play Roman if you're really worried. Most of the time you can just ignore it. And a melee beatstick against Menoth can never really trouble them too much because Gatsby could be power 100. It wouldn't change anything because he's going to go in and kill something. And you know that. And you don't really care because whatever he goes in and kills, afterwards you're going to kill him. There is no amount of focus you can camp that will keep him alive once you send him in. So he is a trade piece, and Menoth are the kings of piece rating. So really, if you see Gatsby, just treat him as if he's a heavy. Like, he'll come in and kill something. Depending on the list, he may even get to pick what he kills. You don't really care most of the time. Just give him a heavy, give him whatever he is happy enough to take, and then just trade for it, and then continue on with the game. Just pretend he's another, you know, high-powered heavy that can go quite far. It really doesn't... All the games I've played, he's put up some clouds, he's walked forward, he's traded his light for some stuff, he's come in and killed, like, a heavy or a battle engine, and then he's died. Like, it's... He's never had any more impact than that in any of the games that I've played. Because Menoth generally just, you know, hits hard enough and can trade well enough that he is kind of irrelevant against them. Like, not irrelevant as in he's not good. He's still good for his points cost, but he doesn't change any matchups. He doesn't force you to play differently than you otherwise would. That's my answer for Gatsby. And Aurora, I haven't played against it. I've thought about it. I think you just play like you would against any other fastest. You just give him enough of your army that he has to do something, but not too much that you can't counterpunch and get work done. That's the theory.
Okay. So, next question. Will any of the new convergence of Cirrus changes prompt you to approach these matchups differently?
When he says changes, does he mean the ones that have already come out? Or what are we talking about?
Yeah, I think he's saying, basically, do you think that this set of new releases with the 6x4, some new convergence stuff, etc., is it enough that is it having a big enough effect on the meta that it's adjusting what your list look like or how you're playing potentially?
I played a game against the new medium bases in Convergence, and they are all better, but I didn't really notice any difference in the matchup. The matchup just plays the same way. Like, they get slightly more work done, and you have to pay a little bit more attention to them, and he gets a little bit more of them. But they were so inefficient before that it just brings them back up to parity. So you'll just treat them as any other medium-based infantry. They have a little bit of recursion, but it's not enough to matter in the long run. So I would say, from a protector player's perspective, it almost has no impact. I wouldn't change any of the lists that you were running to worry about it.
Another question. This is actually the last of the Patreon questions. He says, is a 6x4 with a requisition jack as scary as two Menite Archons with requisition initiates?
So we're comparing Gatsby with his jack to two Archons and three units of initiates?
And requisition initiates, yeah.
I think he's way less scary. Because he is very... I guess he's two-dimensional. I was about to say one-dimensional, but he's two-dimensional. So he can put clouds up, and he hits really hard, as I said earlier, which is good. But if you have initiates and two archons, you can kind of do whatever you want from that point. You basically can't be shot. You have dispel grievous wounds. You have a flying model that, you know, has thresher, can kill infantry, can kill, do damage to heavies. You can almost play any caster you want once you've got two archons and three initiates, and it'll be somewhat functional. So I would say the initiates and the archons give you way more options than Gatsby. And in terms of power, raw power level, similar, maybe even higher.
All right, so on to the questions that I had for you. So one thing that is fairly common in a life cycle of a model in War Machine is that something will release, people will talk about how it's, you know, just overpowered and ridiculous, and then people will find answers to it, and as the player of the new model gets a little bit bored of playing it and wants to play something new, and as people start finding answers, it starts to get sat aside and kind of fades away a little bit from what you see in common play. And around this last year's WTC, there were lots of people talking about the Menite Archon and how amazing it was. I'm kind of curious, do you think that it is likely to kind of have the same progression that I discussed earlier with that life cycle, or do you think that it's something that's just going to be kind of a staple for Menoth lists for a long time to come?
Usually some models fade away because they receive like a minor nerf, which function mm-hmm. doesn't change how they play, but people just look at it and say, oh my god, they nerfed it. It must be terrible. And they just stop playing it. So, you know, there are plenty of examples, you know, Iona, whatever.
Right.
Are still almost 95% as good as they were, and no one plays them anymore because they're just like, oh no, I got nerfed, it can't be good anymore. Assuming the Menite Archon doesn't get nerfed, I think it will stay though, because it's not played just based on raw power. It also gives, it also gives too many things to your list that you can't replace elsewhere. So you can get, like, it has Dispel, which in Protector isn't that hard to come by, to be fair. It has Grievous Wounds, which is relatively hard to come by. Is a model with Flight, which doesn't exist in Menop. You can just think of it as like Super Pathfinder, which is Pathfinder itself is already hard to get in Menop. So like having Flight is just amazing. And it has, you know, it has good output and good survivability, which you're always looking for in a model for a cheap point cost. So I don't think there will be a meta where you can't find something you want in that package. Now, if they nerf it or increase the point cost, change its abilities, that's different. But assuming they don't, I think you will play this model in pretty much all the lists that can run it. Not necessarily two copies, because in Faithful Masses, I think you would always play two copies. But not necessarily in other lists. So I think it's here to stay.
How do you think the Menite Archon compares to the other Archons that have released in this wave of releases?
We have a rankings list for the Archons that I guess changes reasonably frequently, and I think the Menite Archon's probably about third on the list, around there. Third, maybe, yeah, about third. It fluctuates, but approximately third. I would say the Void Archon is currently probably the best. I think the Thamrite Archon is arguably as good as the Menite Archon. And recently, I think the Dunian Archon is actually really good as well. I don't know if it's better than the Menite Archon. It probably isn't. But it's certainly in the conversation. I don't think the Primal Archon's particularly good. Although, the problem with the Primal Archon, it wants to be friendly faction in the Hordes list. Like, all of the ones that want to play it. But it's not. If its abilities, its stat line and its abilities are quite good. If you could get it to be friendly faction like the Menite Archon is in Menoth, it would actually be very good. But unfortunately, outside of, I think, minions and Circle, it's not friendly faction. Like, if you could be friendly faction in Legion, I would play that in Legion. But it's not. So, it misses out on a lot of places where you would otherwise play it. So, yeah, I think the Menite Archon's very consistent. It's going to be in the top three, I think, all the time. I don't think it's ever going to be the best one, but it's always going to be very good.
I am pretty excited to see what, for example, the Grimkin and the Legion of Everblight Archons end up looking when they release.
I think Legion needs an Archon. Grimkin don't really need an Archon, but it'll probably look like a Menite Archon with a gun.
I'm pretty sure it is supposed to be a Fallen Menite Archon.
It probably throws its flail or something. Some Grimkin. It's probably got like three pages of rules text that no one can remember. Every time I play it, I think of something new.
But that's totally necessary and needed.
Yes. With cool names for all the abilities, you know, that no one remembers, but are really good for trivia. So,
you had mentioned in the Flame Guard theme list the Flamebringers Cavalry. Is that a unit that you play very often, or what are your thoughts on that unit?
So every time I think about playing Guardians of the Temple, the Daughter Cav unit are probably the main draw card, I would say, to the theme. Yeah. Because like I said, there's not really anything else in faction that does what they do, which is fast pathfinding unit. I haven't really played or thought about playing them as much since Warriors of the Old Faith got released. And that's mostly because if you play Warriors of the Old Faith, you kind of get all a bunch of Speed 8 and Speed 9 models. So at that point, do you really need Flamebringers? Like, you could have an army that's almost all Speed 8, Speed 9, all armor 19+, and some of them have Flight, and some of them have Pathfinder. And then when you think about that, you think, well, what do I need Flamebringers for? And I think the answer is, unfortunately, right now, if you want a fast list, just play Warriors of the Old Faith, because you can be past the midline top of one and win models that are hard to kill and hit pretty hard. So you really, unfortunately, I don't think you need Daughter Cav anymore. Or it's sad because I think they're very good. And you can actually run them in Warriors of the Old Faith, which is interesting. I don't think they're good in that theme because they give something for their low power attacks to do. Because otherwise, as I said, if your whole list is armor 19 with boxes, the power 10s and power 12s basically do nothing. But if you suddenly have a unit of Daughter Cav, then, well, all their power 10s and power 12s suddenly start gravitating towards that area of the board. And they're like, well, we've got a job to do. Please let us shoot something that, you know, we can actually damage, which then feels bad because then you can't move around the board because you're only vulnerable unit and it becomes a problem. So, unfortunately, I think they're very good, but right now, because of Warriors of the Old Faith, they've kind of been replaced, and I don't see any reason to play them at the moment. But I would love to, but right now, I can't really justify it.
That is interesting. They are just kind of a cool looking unit that I've always liked. I had Mike Purrier play them into me quite a bit. He had kind of a fascination with them. And as I recall, they have a crit effect to stop healing.
Yeah, they have crit grievous wounds.
Crit grievous wounds, right. And this is probably just, playing against Purrier, whatever. But, like, it might as well have just been, like, grievous wounds because he rolled the crit basically every single time. But that was more
impactful back in Mark 2, though, to be
sure. Yeah.
Like toward the end of Mark 2, the crit part of that was definitely more relevant than it is now. Because if you crit someone's Warlock in Mark 2, it's a big deal. Whereas now, because it's a crit effect and it's not that reliable, it doesn't really factor into how you play them as much anymore.
Sure. All right. Well, we are going to pause the conversation here and continue it in the bonus episode for people who are backing us on Patreon. Real quick, I want to remind people to check out discountgamesinc.com. By the time this is live, by the time it's live or shortly thereafter, we will have the pre-sales up for Warcaster Neo Mechanica. And one thing I wanted to say real quick about that product line, we are going to be able to get some Kickstarter product from that game. And so those will be a little bit earlier than the normal release stuff. And the Kickstarter stuff, we're going to be selling at 15% off. It won't qualify for our rebate program. And then when we also have some stuff for Warcaster Neo Mechanica that it starts releasing in August, and that stuff will be listed at 15% off and will qualify for our rebate program. So check out discountgamesinc.com and you can get your purchases ready for Warcaster Neo Mechanica. Real quick before we go, Jack, have you looked much at Neo Mechanica, or have you had any interest in that game?
There has been some interest in our group. I haven't looked at the rules thoroughly myself, but I've looked at the models. They look good. And from what I hear, the rules are pretty good as well. So I will check them out at some point. I haven't done so yet, but it looks promising.
Nice. All right. Well, Jack, I wanted to thank you very much for taking the time to get on Skype and do this record with me. We appreciate your knowledge that you're sharing with us. And thank you, everyone, who is listening and who supports the Patreon for the podcast. You guys are awesome. And thanks for the support.